Today's episode of the Cyclone Fanatic Saturday podcast is brought to you by Iowa Pork. I've had Iowa Pork for dinner three nights this week. It's the absolute perfect meat for a busy guy like me. There's so many different ways to cook it, and it tastes delicious every single time. We wouldn't have that tasty dinner without help from our friends at Iowa Pork, the presenting sponsor of today's Saturday podcast with my good friend, Austin Hurst. Had him on the podcast 2 weeks ago. Brought him back this week to talk a ton about the NBA offseason, which is now officially set into motion. Just a heads up, we recorded this podcast via Skype due to some scheduling issues, and I think the audio quality is pretty good, all things considered, but there might be a couple spots when his mic drops out during the show. So just a warning ahead of time. With all that said, here's this week's Saturday podcast presented by Iowa Pork. Joined now here on the Cyclone Fanatic Saturday podcast by my friend and now Cyclone Fanatic podcast recurring guest, Austin Hurst. What's up, brother?
What's up, dude? It feels good to be back. It's a little quicker turnaround than the last time.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like I said, you're basically a recurring guest now. Like you're a regular.
I'm a regular. That feels good. I like how you say that.
Well, I was with Chris on Friday, and we were talking about the Saturday podcast. Me and him were going to record something while we were driving to a meeting that we had in Marshalltown, and it just didn't end up working out. And he was like, you should just hit up Austin, see if he'd be down to do a podcast. And I was like, oh,
here we are.
That's a good idea. Yeah. So here we are now.
I'm always into talks in NBA.
Definitely, man. Always. Obviously, the NBA Finals, there's not a lot to go over with all of that right now. I think that bone has been picked off pretty well. So we're just going to talk a little bit about the off season, and you and I kind of put together a list of the topics that we see being some of the biggest things going into this NBA off season. Obviously, really the biggest one is where LeBron James is going to go next, if he's going to return to Cleveland, if he's going to go somewhere else. And you and I were kind of talking about this, and it's almost not even worth our time to sit here and really try and analyze that due to the fact that everybody's going to be talking about that here in the next couple months or weeks, I guess, really.
Yeah. Yeah. You already know that ESPN will be picking it up and running with it. I'm sure they'll do enough talking for both of us. So we just kind of – I know we kind of came to the agreement of just kind of – touching on it and moving on.
For sure. So I think the first thing that we have on our list here, there's two that I think I look at and I see being really the most of the most immediate importance. One of those obviously is hits home for me personally, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers pursuit of a new general manager or director of basketball operations. I don't know what their technical term for it is, but Brian Colangelo, the whole Twitter saga coming to an end earlier this week with him announcing his resignation from the Philadelphia 76ers. There's some interesting names that are being tossed around right now, some guys that I think are pretty intriguing. I'm going to throw my weight behind David Griffin, and I think that you're probably going to do the same thing.
Yeah, I think he is probably the most logical choice right now, just with LeBron's looming free agency. Obviously, it's well documented that LeBron had a great amount of respect for him and liked working with him. He threw out that long, heartfelt, you know, thank you for everything, Griff, when he wasn't extended by Dan Gilbert. So I'm with you there. I'd throw that hat into that ring. And, yeah, you know, there's just a lot of steam, obviously, behind Philadelphia. You know, I know Chris touched on the radio the other day the top odds to sign LeBron, pretty much just due to the favorites to win the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. And Philly and Houston were tied for number two. And obviously that, you know, has a big impact, obviously, on Vegas's thinking of where LeBron's going to go. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's probably the top choice right now. I would be very surprised if Philly obviously doesn't take a long look at him.
Yeah.
They might go a different direction, but I'm with you. I think he's the top choice. And, you know, when you got a chance to bring in a once in a generation talent like LeBron, I think you're probably going to do everything you can to do that.
Right. And I think that, I mean, you know how I feel about the whole LeBron joining the Sixers thing, that I think there's some holes when you look at it from a basketball angle of that whole deal that needed to be sorted out. But, I mean, I think, I don't know. The thing that I would like most about bringing in David Griffin is that you know you're going to get a guy who has experience making decisions in an NBA front office, you know? Like, you look at some of these other names that have been thrown around. Yeah, I know there's the assistant general manager for the Celtics who's been under Danny Ainge, and obviously Danny Ainge has been, if not the best general manager in the NBA in recent years, he's right there in that top group. But I want a guy that is going to come in and has done this at a high level already and has had to make some basketball decisions. Like, I don't want them to have to break somebody in when you're already pretty far down the road of your development of this team, you know? Like, you really, like, whoever's coming in next is working to just build on what these last two guys have gotten for the franchise as much as they are, like, trying to rebuild something. That's why I like the idea of David Griffin, is because he's been in a situation like that before where you have a team with some pieces, but then you just need to go and get, you know, in that instance, it was LeBron. You had to go get him. You had to make the trade for Kevin Love and on down the line. And I'm just not sure how a guy who doesn't have any experience making those decisions, and I just don't know how he's going to fit into that when you have a young roster like the Sixers that's posed to win right now, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Griffin, that's also my thinking as well. Griffin's a guy that's been there before. Obviously, he's a guy, too, who has been heavily involved in making big personnel decisions, big trade deadline decisions. And, you know, for as great as LeBron is, he's a hard guy to work with. You mm-hmm. know, he's obviously got a lot of influence on what they're doing. And he seemingly had a very good working relationship with David Griffin. And LeBron had a lot of respect for him. And, you know, it's hard to deny Griffin's body of work in Cleveland. So I agree with you there. I think he's got to be the top choice. You know, and we touched on it last podcast as well. You know, not exactly sure how the basketball side of it works out. Like it's been said, Rich Paul, you know, he represents Ben Simmons and LeBron James. So you know that Philly's already, I'm sure, having conversations with him.
Yeah.
I just think Philly, you know, if you have a chance to bring in a talent like LeBron, you're obviously going to do it, and you'll just kind of, you know, work it out later. It's kind of like Houston when they had the chance to get Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, you know, all right, we're not exactly sure how this is going to work, but we just want to acquire the talent and make it work. That was kind of Daryl Morey's thought process, and it's obviously seemed to work out. So I think Philly would be wise, you know, going with Griffin, because even if you don't land LeBron, I think he's very well qualified to do the job and continue to build that franchise.
Yeah. I agree for sure. The other topic that I think is of the most, you know, like kind of like I said, is the most immediate impact, and it's something that you and I touched on a lot in the last podcast that we did together, is who goes number one in the NBA draft, which is what, 2 weeks from yesterday, away now. June 21st. And I mean, all signs are pointing now to DeAndre Ayton being that number one pick, which, I mean, I think that's probably the right move at the end of the day, but I still am just not sure what DeAndre Ayton, like, how does he carve his niche in the NBA? Like, is he going to be a Joel Embiid or a Karl Anthony Towns, or is he going to be a guy who plays with his back to the basket all the time and really is just a defensive anchor? Like, I don't know if that's what you need to get more value out of the number one pick than that, in my opinion. And I mean, I know my team just last year went and got a guy who barely even played for them. So, it's hard for me to really even say anything like that. But I want to see a guy who's going to come in and can make, like, an instant impact for being elite at one thing. And I'm not sure what DeAndre Ayton is elite at.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting topic. You know, I'm not sure either. Really, if you just take a look at his raw numbers, his block percentage really wasn't that encouraging in college, which that's one of the few stats that actually does translate over to the NBA a lot of times. So that's a little discouraging. Is he really going to be a rim protector? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like you talked about. He's more of a back to the basket type of guy, which is kind of what the NBA is going away from. So he's obviously, you know, very athletic. He's huge, and he's got a lot of intangibles to work with. So I think he probably has the highest ceiling in the draft, but I think he might have a lower floor than people are thinking. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to kill Phoenix if they do end up going with him number one. I personally would, I'd go more towards, you know, a polished product with like I think Doncic is more of a polished product, but I'm definitely not going to fault him if they go the route of Ayton, but I have a lot of questions about him as well.
See, and I think it's easy to see that Doncic is definitely a more polished product when you look at his production in the EuroLeague and the accolades that he was able to earn there playing at, you know, what's probably the second highest level. I mean, I don't know how the G League compares to EuroLeague basketball, but I would imagine that they're probably pretty comparable, you know. And to see a guy at that age, like putting up those numbers, earning MVP, winning the MVP for the entire playoffs and stuff like that, I agree with you that I think he's the more polished product, but I think at the same time, he's probably the bigger risk, you know? And I think, you know, what you talked about with Ayton, like he could have a low ceiling. I'm not sure how, or a low floor. I'm not even sure how low his floor is necessarily, as it's just like I don't know how to put this. If he's a guy who can't really protect the rim that well, as big as he is, and he's a guy who is just really a pure post player, like what can he be at best? Like really just like a marginal backup center? Like if those are your two things, you know, if he can become elite at one thing, you can work your way into being like an NBA starter consistently. But I don't know if he can't improve on some of those areas. I just don't know that he can give you what you want out of a number one pick.
Yeah, no, those are definitely great points. I think obviously the biggest thing you look at with him is just his raw intangibles. You know, he's got great size. He's a really good athlete. He shows a decent looking jump shot out to about 15 feet, which, you know, maybe they think they can extend a little bit farther. Obviously, I'm sure, you know, Phoenix and the other teams looking at him at the top are assume that he's going to be able to protect the rim and guard in the post. And he's obviously, you know, got the athleticism to guard out on the perimeter, which a lot of the game's turning into. But I'm also a little bit biased. I'm just not as high on him as a lot of people are. I think he's obviously very talented and he's got a chance to be good. I just don't know. You know, I'm just not sure how good he can be. So that's why I think there's maybe a little bit of a risk. Like I look at someone comparable. I look at like Jaren Jackson, a guy who, you know, has good size. He's not as athletic, but, you know, and he had a little bit of, he had fouling problems in college, but he also shot over 40% from three in college too, which is what obviously, you know, if you guys have watched any games in the finals, that's what the NBA is turning into, is pretty much you've got to be able to switch 1 through 5 and you've almost got to be able to shoot 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. So I think we both agree that we have questions about his game. He's probably, from the sounds of it, he's probably going to go number one. I do think Phoenix does have an interesting core with, you know, Booker and, you've got Josh Jackson, and then you've even got a couple guys sprinkled in, like, you know, TJ Warren, just a couple interesting younger guys like that. You know, I know TJ Warren isn't super young, but he's still in his mid-20s. So, I'm not going to kill Phoenix for going with him number one. I personally probably would go a different route, but I guess that's why they're making the decisions, and we're just giving our input, breaking them down.
So. What do you think about the whole Michael Porter Jr. thing? Comes out this week that the only team who's seen his medical records is the Bulls, and then he's going to do a workout for the Bulls, and then other teams will get his medical records. I mean, does that mean that the Bulls are pretty dead set on taking Michael Porter Jr.?
I think it definitely shows that the Bulls are very interested.
Yeah.
I'm not.
As a Bulls fan, how do you feel about that?
As a Bulls fan, I think personally it depends a lot on what's available around that spot. You know, if you got a chance to snag a guy like Mo Bamba, I think you take him just because I think he fits well next to Lauri Markkanen going forward. But if you're going down the line and, you know, a lot of those guys on the board, on your board, are, you know, going off and, you know, you've got a chance to take him, it might be worth the risk. It's obviously a big risk, but I know I said it on the last podcast, kind of depending on how the dominoes fall, I would not be opposed and not be against the Bulls taking Michael Porter Jr. just because of the upside that I think is potentially there. But like you said, too, it obviously depends a lot on his medical records. And it's very interesting that Chicago was the one that, you know, was first got to, you know, they gave him the medical tests and got the results first. And then they're pretty much dispersing it to all the other teams. That's very interesting to me. But yeah, I don't know. It obviously depends on what his medical record shows.
That scares me a little bit that he would do that. Like, if I'm a Bulls fan, I'm kind of looking at that like, man, like, does he have something to hide a little bit? Like, do you get what I'm kind of saying? Like,
yeah,
If he's not open with his medical records like that, it makes me just feel like there's something that he is not being very straightforward about.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd situation for sure. And he's also going to, you know, he's going to be conducting individual workouts, which, you know, the Bulls will be able to obviously see him. They'll be able to interview him. And then most likely he'll probably be available to media after that. And the media will kind of drill him with questions about that. So I think it'll be interesting to see, obviously, you know, how he looks, how he's running up and down the floor, you know, just – is he able to get his legs and, you know, like, do his mechanics look similar to what they did when he was in high school before he was had this injury or that it was known? Mm-hmm. So, but no, it definitely is cause of concern. It's kind of interesting why it's going down like this. I'm not necessarily sure, but yeah, it's a very interesting situation.
The next big kind of decisions that these NBA teams will have to make is whether or not they're going to make qualifying offers for some restricted free agents. I think this is an interesting restricted free agency class because the guys who are at the top of this draft, what would this be, 2014 coming up now?
Yes.
So the guys, all the guys who are really at the top of it, you know, Joel Embiid and Kristaps Porzingis and all of them, Andrew Wiggins, they have already signed extensions. But there's still some guys like, I mean, Jabari Parker is going to be a restricted free agent, Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine, Marcus Smart. There's some interesting players in there where they're going to have to make some interesting, like some tough decisions, I think. I mean, you especially like think about the Celtics where you're a game away from the NBA Finals with a roster that definitely was not prepared to make it to the NBA Finals. And Smart was a huge piece of that. But you know at the same time, regardless of whatever qualifying offer the Celtics give him, somebody else is going to match that and probably try and undercut the Celtics. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
And so that's going to put them in a position where they've got to make a decision.
Right. And that's an interesting dynamic of, you know, restricted free agents is just a lot of times a team will try to kind of, you know, undercut a player and, you know, the negotiations start and then it's the team kind of says, okay, well, if you think you're worth that money, go get somebody to sign an offer sheet. And then, you know, I think you got 48 hours to match it, I believe, around there. So, yeah, I mean, no, there's a lot of guys that it's going to be very interesting. You know, one of them too is Rodney Hood.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, a guy that goes from averaging double figures in Utah, gets traded at the deadline and, you know, gets benched pretty much the first two games of the finals and then plays pretty well in game three, you know, kind of what is his value. And, right. And Jabari Parker as well, you know, he showed, he looked very good, you know, pre-injury and then had that knee injury. And, you know, it's kind of hard to evaluate what money he's going to get in free agency. I'd be willing to bet that Aaron Gordon is back in Orlando. I think that they'll probably try to build, you know, with him going forward. And I would be very shocked if Zach LaVine is not a Chicago Bull next year.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, both the points you made there about Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine. I think Jabari Parker is probably the biggest question mark, like whether or not – like if someone offers him a max contract for what you can offer a guy coming off his rookie deal, I'm not sure I would match that if I'm the Bucks. I think that he's talented, but as much as he's been injured, And what you saw the team do when he wasn't even on the court, like, I don't know that I would mess with that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'd be pretty surprised if he got the max, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, just too many question marks there. There's
too many stupid teams in this league, though, at the same time. Like, you think about what Brooklyn did with Jeremy Lin at one point. Kent Bazemore. I mean, he got a huge deal, from the Hawks Tim Hardaway Jr., he's the one who was with the Hawks. And the Knicks offered him a huge offer sheet, and they're like, all right, man, go. And, like, there's teams that in this league that are really stupid with how they use their money. And that's why I wouldn't be shocked at all to see one of those group of teams, you know, offer Jabari Parker a bunch of money based on potential, knowing because they're not really even near title contention. They're like, all right, if we have to eat the contract, then we have to eat the contract. And it takes something away from the Bucks at the same time.
Yeah, and something to look at going forward is I think, you know, you're exactly right. A lot of teams were just spending wildly, and one of the biggest reasons that happened was the cap. It's a projection every year, and the cap was projected, I believe it was 2 years ago, to go way up, and it did not go up nearly as high as they thought. So these teams were spending recklessly, and, you know, that's why you got guys like Bismack Biyombo in Orlando making, like, $12 million a year. You know, after he played for Toronto,
right?
You know, all these teams were just wildly spending, thinking the cap was going to go up. And now all these teams, a lot of teams are, you know, just blocked by the cap because of these bad contracts that they've signed players to. And I know that's something that we're going to touch on going forward too. There's just a lot of teams. It's going to be very interesting. I think people might be surprised. There'll be some teams in this draft that'll be willing to trade away assets in draft picks to just get off some of these terrible contracts that they've signed players to.
Well, I mean, another one I think you can think of is Timothy Mozgov with the Lakers. Like, he never gets a deal like that if the cap doesn't blow up that year, you know?
Yeah. And if he doesn't play with LeBron.
Right. Well, yeah, that too. And then Luol Deng was the same way. I mean, the Lakers end up with two of those absolutely terrible contracts that now, when you get into an offseason where you have the potential to sign a LeBron James and a Paul George and a, you know, maybe make a move to get a Kawhi Leonard, you've got to make a bunch of more moves, like, just to make all that stuff work, you know? And it's just, I think that teams are more leery of that maybe than they were previously. But I still, like I said before, I still think there's a lot of stupid teams in this league. Like, there's still a lot of people who are running these basketball teams who just don't really fully think things through in the most realistic way sometimes.
That's definitely true. I think there is a lot of pressure in situations from ownership to kind of win right away. And a lot of these general managers are just trying to push the envelope, you know, oh, this guy, obviously, you know, he had a lot of talent before his injury. Let's go out and try to snag him, type of thing. So I think obviously every situation is different, but I do agree that there is a lot of teams that just wildly spend money. And, you know, that's kind of why, you know, you look at teams that are just repeatedly in the lottery every year. Those are kind of the teams you look at. And a lot of times, if you look at their situation, a lot, you know, some of those teams up there are just absolutely landlocked with terrible contracts. And that's why you've got teams like Denver, who obviously is kind of a small market team anyways, trying to get off the Kenneth Faried contract. There's reports out there that they're willing to shop the number 14 pick just to get off Kenneth Faried's contract, which is 1 year left for about $13.5 million. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if teams that are, you know, towards a rebuild, someone like Brooklyn, you know, would be willing to just take that money and take the lottery pick. And Brooklyn's just a completely different situation because they were just absolutely, you know, just completely in ruins from the big trade that they made back in all the years together now.
2013.
Yeah.
5 years later, and they're still just torn up by that trade.
Yeah. I mean, that's just what happens when you trade away almost every future asset you have to win right away. That's the opposite of the process, Jared.
I know. Everybody thought that's what Brian Colangelo was going to do when he showed up in Philadelphia. But staying in kind of that same vein, I mean, you know, I mentioned the Lakers. They're going to be one of the most interesting teams to watch this offseason, and not only because of the LeBron thing. Like, even if the Lakers don't get LeBron, there's still a chance for them to get a Paul George, get a Kawhi Leonard. And I think those are the two guys that we go into this offseason probably with the most intrigue into what they're going to do. Like, the biggest, like, thing that where, like, kind of leaves you on the edge of your seat, where it's like, man, like, are they going to go back to – like, is Paul George going back to Oklahoma City? Is Kawhi going to rejoin the Spurs through after all this stuff that has happened? I mean, I definitely don't think Paul George is going back to Oklahoma City. I think, honestly, I think where he would be the best basketball fit, and this is, I'm trying to be unbiased with his opinion, is Philadelphia. I think that's where he would be the best pure basketball fit, but I'm not sure that's how that they will end up doing that, because I think that probably Houston and Los Angeles are the two most likely teams to land him.
Yeah, and you know, this is the world's greatest soap opera. It's year round.
Yeah.
The Kawhi Leonard situation is just very unique because, you know, just obviously following him and everybody knowing who he is, he was just always this quiet, you know, superstar playing for this organization that never has internal problems and just does everything the right way. And now they're not getting along with their star player, and there's questions if he'll even play a game for him next year, which he's under contract. So that's to me is probably the most intriguing, just to see if the Spurs kind of bite the bullet, trade him away, and just try to start the rebuild right now. I mean, obviously, a lot of the guys that they have are on their way out. They've got some decent young talent. You know, DeJounte Murray's looked like a nice player, and, you know, just kind of start the rebuild now. But it is just an interesting dynamic, because I just think there's, you know, I don't think the Spurs want to go that route, because I think once they decide to go that route, Popovich is gone. I think he's done.
Yeah, and that's where I think they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. Like, if they want to get rid of Kawhi and they want to do this rebuild, then getting rid of Kawhi is probably the best way to do it, because then you can figure out some way to get some assets and stuff like that out of them. And if you're going to do it, probably the best time to do it would be this summer, unless you're going to wait it out until February, which at that point, maybe you'll be able to talk yourself into, oh, he's going to come back, and then you get to July and he doesn't come back, you know? So it's like, right. it's a hard tower to lean, like, to have to balance on, just because if you try and wait, it wouldn't take much to end up with nothing. And if you ship him, you're probably not going to get your full value for him at the same time, because of the fact that he has made it, or I think it's become pretty clearly known that he doesn't really want to be there.
Yeah, definitely. That's the problem that they're faced with right now, is exactly what you said. Do we want to try to get the most value out of him right now as we can and dish him away with one full year on his contract, kind of like what Indiana did with Paul George last year? Or do we want to wait it out, try to convince him to re-sign and just take the risk? And if he doesn't re-sign, then, you know, we just lost him for nothing. Mm-hmm. Or do we want to, you know, get the value out of him in February? But like you said, teams around the league will know whether he wants out or not. And that'll just, you know, trades and everything is obviously all about leverage. And if a team knows that he wants out and he's going to be gone, what's the point of them paying assets to get him, you know, for 1 year,
right,
for a couple months? You know, unless you're 100% pushing for a championship and your goal is to win right now and you don't care about the future. But a lot of the teams that are pushing to win championships are fairly well built for the future, where they don't want to give up those assets. So, yeah, to what you said about Paul George, I do agree with you about the Philly fit. I think he would be a nice fit there. That's kind of something that Philly needs, is, you know, just another shooter and a guy that can defend. And obviously, you know, Paul George is, you know, a star. He's an all-star caliber player. So he would be a very nice fit with Ben Simmons, who can still continue to play on the ball and facilitate. And I think Houston's an interesting idea too. I've heard that they're making a big push for him, and I could see him fitting there as well. You know, he's he is kind of a guy that with the way he plays, he doesn't have to be the premier player like he was in Indiana. He can kind of be a number two like he was on Oklahoma City. I mean, he still had a solid year, but they didn't obviously accomplish as much as some thought they would. Or he can head out to L.A., and that's obviously was the rumor when Indiana was trying to trade him. He went to them and told him that, you know, I'm not re-signing after this year. And there was reports that that he was saying he was going to the Lakers or at least to L.A., and that was why they shipped him. So he's a very interesting one to look at, but I also would not completely count out. I've seen a lot of people say, oh, well, there's no way that LeBron's going to the Lakers. I'm not going to completely discount that just because they're going to have room to sign another max player if they signed him. And, I mean, you can't tell me that the Lakers core is worse than what he's playing with in Cleveland right now.
That's fair. I mean, okay, so I got two more questions here before we gotta go. My first one. If the Lakers end up with Kawhi and Paul George, or they end up with LeBron and Paul George, do you think that team can beat the Warriors?
They would have a better chance with LeBron.
I mean, obviously, but yeah.
Obviously, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But me personally, you know, just with the roster that they have right now, obviously assuming that they don't lose any of the, you know, the young pieces that they have right now. I'm still going to say no. I don't think they're good enough to beat them. And I obviously, you know, the point I made about him having, in my opinion, a better pieces around him in L.A. playing for the Lakers than he does in Cleveland. But he also, you know, when he was playing with Cleveland, he didn't have to play Golden State until the finals.
Yeah.
And I think that he's just – I think LeBron – not to get too deep in his free agency talk, I think that he's just at a point in his career where he knows now it's pretty much now or never. This is kind of my last run.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I need to go somewhere where I can win and just, you know, try to win some championships and continue to cement his legacy against Jordan. So what do you think? Do you think he would be able to beat Golden State with that roster?
No. I don't think so. I mean, you got to have more than two guys. I think we're seeing that right now. Like, even when Kevin Love plays well, they're still finding an uphill battle against Golden State, you know?
Yeah.
You got to have that third and maybe even a fourth guy. Like, if you're really going to push them at the level to, like, the very brink. Like, Houston pushed them, but they got their butts kicked in those third and fourth quarters in those last two games. Like, they did not push Golden State to the absolute brink, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you got to have at least one more guy, which is where if Houston ends up with Paul George, I think that brings it a little bit closer, where maybe the Rockets could knock them off next year. But you got to have that one more dude to kind of balance that stuff out, you know.
And yeah, I'm in theory, you know, you're going up against a team that has four of arguably the best top 20-25 players on the planet right now.
Yeah.
So
plus your sixth man is at minimum a top 50 player.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you're just going up against, to be honest, an all-time great team is what we're looking at. You know, this is a team that won 73 games and then added, in my opinion, the second best player on the planet to their team.
Right.
So, an all-great team. And it would take, you know, if LeBron went to Houston, then obviously that's very interesting as well. Could that team beat Golden State? I think it would definitely have a chance. But, I mean, obviously it's just an arms race right now and everybody's trying to catch Golden State.
All right, last thing. If you had to pick a future – if you had to pick the next 4 years, your team gets the next 4 years of either the Sixers' future or the Celtics' future, who are you going to take right now?
Oh, man. Just currently right now or just everything taken into account?
Taking everything into account.
Taking everything into account? Man, you're going to hate me, Jared. I'm going to go with Boston.
Man, I think I would too. I think I would too.
I think a big factor with my decision is I don't know the exact numbers, but, man, Boston's still got some first-round picks going forward from teams.
Yeah.
And – you know, they can just keep pulling in assets, and, you know, they're in a position where, I mean, they can trade role players and pair it with a first round pick, and then, you know, get, you know, if they want to hire pick, or, mm-hmm. you know, they've just got an unbelievable pool of assets right now, including draft picks going forward. And, you know, regardless of, you know, I've read articles today that the Celtics are afraid that Kyrie Irving might not re-sign after next year. I think even going forward without him, they just have so many assets that they could, you know, make up for it by, right. you know, either pairing a future draft pick and a young guy to trade for someone like that, or just, you know, they've got so many options with the amount of assets they have, players and picks. I think I would have to go with Boston.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for all the reasons that you laid out there. And that's why I think it's so crucial for Philly to knock this general manager hire out of the park, you know?
100%.
I mean,
100%.
This could be a major turning point in the future of the Eastern Conference. But
absolutely.
All right, man.
But I will say, not to cut you off, I would be 100% content if I was in either situation going forward.
Fair enough. Yeah. I'm sure you can especially say that being a Bulls fan, where you're not near what either one of them has at this point.
You would be right. Hopefully that, you know, I will say this. I like the Bulls young core. You know, I thought Fred did a good job last year, and the Bulls got some good pieces with, obviously, assuming they re-sign LaVine and Chris Dunn and Markkanen, they're going to have the number 7 pick, and they've also got number 22. So they've got a good core going forward if they can draft well this year and, you know, just kind of keep, you know, developing the young talent in not this year's free agency, but next year they're going to have a lot of money. So if they can entice someone to come in, they could be right back up there at the top.
We'll see. All right, man. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for taking some time to talk with me. I'm sure I'll talk to you again here in the next couple weeks. We'll get you back on after the draft, maybe after free agency too. We'll get a reaction from all this stuff going into next year.
Yeah, sounds great to me, man. Always appreciate you having me, and take care, buddy.
Yeah, you too, man. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Thanks for listening to today's Saturday podcast presented by Iowa Pork. Thanks again to Austin for taking some time to come in, or actually, I guess not come in, sit on the phone with me for half an hour and talk about basketball. I think the two of us could probably do that for hours, and I'm sure that we will be back on a podcast again before long, talking more about the NBA offseason and looking ahead to the next NBA season. Thanks again to Iowa Pork for being the presenting sponsor of our Saturday podcast each and every week. We appreciate them greatly. I appreciate their contributions to the food world. I had a pot roast this week that was absolutely delicious. I don't even have anything else to say about it than that. Everybody else have a great rest of your weekend. Stay safe out there, Fanatics, and we'll talk to you guys again on Monday. Peace.